Our organization helps students put on town halls, and not just students, community members, but I say students because most of the people we work with are students. And I hope you've gotten a chance to meet people from your university or at least your city and kind of, you know, be wowed at all the people right next to you who maybe you never knew who have similar interests, and there's a lot of common ground to discuss these issues with. So the series I will be talking about today is called Hope Not Hate, and that's the series that's specifically on this issue. We have five different series on the environment, on the future of the UN, on alleviating poverty, and various issues, so you can check with our website if you're interested in those. But the toolkit for Hope Not Hate is in your folder. It's this five-page document. And so I'm going to be going through kind of the highlights of that document. And I just want to go over the concept of this series, just to make it really clear what the goals of this kind of event would be. So today, one of the greatest challenges we face is the dangerous tension that has grown between the United States and Muslim states and communities worldwide. This deepening divide is not just tragic, but it also threatens cooperation on issues of universal concern, ranging from terrorism and radicalism to human development and freedom. These issues take on greater weight with the five-year anniversary of September 11th, and as recent controversies ranging from the Danish cartoons to the Dubai ports reveal, relations between the U.S. and the Islamic world are shaped by ever-increasing tension, hyperbole, stereotyping, and suspicion. Global politics and U.S. foreign policy are becoming increasingly shaped by a schism between state and religion that is driven by hurt, fear, and distrust. Americans for Informed Democracy is coordinating Hope Not Hate to commemorate the September 11th attacks with a positive call to action out of the ashes of tragedy. This fall, AID will work to develop a comprehensive strategy that promotes positive relations between the U.S. and the Muslim world in the long term, instead of relations based on fear and misunderstanding. Hope Not Hate is an annual fall series of town halls and international video conference dialogues on the future of Muslim-U.S. world relations. It's spearheaded by Americans for Informed Democracy, and in September of 2005, Hope Not Hate engaged over 7,500 students and citizens in more than 60 communities in town hall meetings on this important topic. The series, which has been coordinated annually in 2003, 2004, and 2005, was called by the Boston Globe editorial board a victory of knowledge and inquiry over fear and blind pledges of revenge. In 2006, each town hall will open with presentations from a combination of international relations scholars, policymakers, journalists, and experts on Islam to discuss some of the most pressing issues of our time. What lessons have we learned over the 5 years since the 9/11 attacks? How is the United States implementing the 9/11 Commission's long-term recommendations? How can U.S.-Muslim world relations be improved? After these presentations, students and members of the general public in attendance will be able to participate in an interactive question and answer session. It's kind of a mini conference of this nature. You can become part of this exciting initiative by hosting a town hall meeting on your campus this fall. AID will support you every step of the way in organizing your event as outlined in the following presentation. AID provides mini grants, free posters, help with identifying speakers, circulating press releases, sending out email announcements, and more. We offer student leaders mini-grants of up to $150 to support speaker travel expenses, advertisement costs, and light refreshments at these events. So that's the quick overview of this program, and now I'm going to go in depth to kind of the steps to this organization process and hopefully make it seem very doable and easy for you all busy students, going back to your universities in the fall. So this is a way that you can really bring the world home from your international experience, from experience today at this conference, from I'm sure experiences with friends, family, experiences with your own culture and dealing with being an American and also, having another ethnicity. So the options here of things that you can do with our organization are to host a town hall meeting, to coordinate a video conference, to hold a documentary screening, or to write a letter to the editor. And we also have a few other programs. One is community-wide initiatives, and we just really encourage students to use us as your jumping-off point to, if you think of a really creative program that you'd like to do, to let us know, and most likely we can help you, facilitate it and make it a reality. So some people ask, what is a town hall? Who's been to a town hall meeting here? Just raise your hands. Very few of you. And you may have been to one and not even known that that's what it was, because they're called different things. We call them a town hall, but it's basically an effort to increase Americans' global awareness. The goal is that students should not have to recreate the wheel to put on these events, but that they can be really long-lasting in their impact and really worthwhile for people who come. It's an event that's free and open to the public. Most of the attendees are usually students, especially if it's at a university, but it's very important to say that it's open to anyone who would want to come, citizens and everyone in a community. Usually we think the ideal structure is to have 3 to 4 panelists to give brief presentations. As you saw today, it's hard to limit the panelists' speeches to 7 minutes or even 5 minutes sometimes when they're shorter. So that's an important thing, to have them speak very briefly to allow a longer time for interactive question and answer formats. And usually they'll last about an hour and a half, these town hall events. So how do we help you? We give you mini grants, as I said earlier, of up to $150 to students who are putting these on, so they can advertise free pizza and refreshments, and that usually lures in more students. We also have toolkits, like the one in your folder, that go into this process in detail so you can know what the steps are, what you have to do, what your role is, so you're not in the dark on this. We help you identify speakers, which I'll go into detail, greater detail later, but we have big spreadsheets of speakers all across the country. So if you're in a certain city in Nebraska, we can send you a list of 20 speakers who we think would be good. We also help with publicity. We send you free posters. We give you templates for press releases to email out, and I'll go into that in greater detail later as well. And finally, we support you in every way we can. We're really available on email, on the phone, in our offices, 24/7 with helping if something isn't going right at the last minute, or if you need help in any way with these events. So the three steps, we've broken it down in the toolkit to three major steps. The first step is reserving a room, which can often be more difficult than it seems like it would be the easiest thing ever to get a room. But the bureaucratic process at a lot of universities makes it a little difficult. Second, identify and invite the speakers. After you have your room reserved and you have your time and date, you can delve into this and try to get really great speakers for your event. And third is publicity. After you have the speakers and the room, you need people who will come and listen to these experts speak. So first, we'll go into how to reserve a room. There are three avenues, and it's great to go at all of these at once, because sometimes one will work, and one person will say, oh, I'll help you, but I can't do it for a few weeks. So we found that it's really great to go at these all three at once, since this can be a really complex step. First is to go through an existing student group. So if you're a part of maybe, a Muslim Students Association or something like that, it's great to go through those groups that have, the authority on campus to just reserve a room by going into student activities and signing up. And we have templates in the toolkit of specific letters, just that you can fill in the blanks with your university, your student organization, and you can email it out so you don't have to write anything. It goes into detail about what this series is, what our organization is, so that's very clear. Second is through an academic department. Often you can email the head of a department or even a professor and tell them that you'd like to put on this event, hopefully in their specialty. And usually they take interest in kind of helping you out and helping you get through the bureaucratic process. And often administrations at universities are more receptive if you approach them with a professor, with someone who's a staff member there. Third is directly to a university administrator. If you've had contact with someone or if you've reserved a room in the past, that's a great way to contact them. And we also have templates for each of these three things that we've organized so many events that we've found these templates are really helpful, because they're ways in phrasing the event in a clear way where someone who's very busy can read them, see what this event is about, decide if they can help you or not, and do that quickly. And through all of our experience in organizing events, we've found that this is a really good way to approach people in reserving a room. So use all channels simultaneously. That's very important. And when you have your room reserved, that's the first step from our perspective of helping you to organize the event. So when you have your room reserved, there's a site online where you can go and register it. It's all in the toolkit. And then we start the dialogue with you on how to move forward with your event. So the second step is identifying speakers, which some often students think is very difficult. But we found that people are experts, are very receptive to, you know, a group of concerned students coming together with this parent organization of Americans for Informed Democracy, that they're kind of intrigued by it and they think that it sounds interesting. Often it's just, you know, an hour and a half of their time, so it's not that out of the blue that they would be able to come. So we recommend to send out four times as many speakers as you desire. So if you want three, it's good to send out 12 invitations, because oftentimes people are out of town or just happen to be busy that day. And the more, the better at this, because it's great to, if you send it out to lots of people, and then it's not that difficult because we have templates for these invitations, so you can enter in, you know, the speaker's name and not have change the invitation so much, to just put maybe a paragraph in about their specialty and things like that, and then you're good to go. And usually people get back to you pretty quickly. And another thing we recommend is, if you're emailing, to call right before you email it, and you can call the speaker's office or assistant, and you can say a way to kind of be saying, have a purpose for your call instead of just calling saying, I'm sending you an invitation, to call and ask, you know, I'd like to send you an invitation. What's the best way to send it to you, fax or email? And there's even a script for calling potential speakers, because I know that some people may be shy on the phone. So that's a good way to kind of have an interactive conversation, and they'll usually then want to know more about the event and who you are and things like that, and you can get into more of a dialogue. And we also recommend that if you're extremely nervous about the phone and don't feel like you could ever call someone and start this kind of a conversation, that you can call late at night. And a lot of our organizers do this and are very successful with it. So to call at like 11 or 12 somebody's office and just leave a voicemail and say, I was calling to see what way would be best to send this invitation to you. I'll email it to you, but call me if you'd like it sent another way. So that's a good way to bypass it if you're very shy. Another thing is just to call and follow up with the speaker if you don't hear from them via email, because often people get a ton of emails, and if they can just place a human, you know, face or voice to this invitation, they're much more likely to say yes and to kind of actually think about it. And examples of people that are good to invite are experts at your university or universities nearby. It's great to tap into resources if you're, say, at a really small university and there's a really big one nearby, to try to get people from that university to come to yours. And one more thing is that when you have your room reservation, we send you a list of about 15 to 20 speakers in your area, and you can see if you'd like to invite them or if you'd like to, you know, look for your own research, do your own research to find speakers, and that's great too, but we try to provide you with options so you don't have to research as much. Another great thing is to go to faculty, your current professors or past professors, tell them that you're trying to put on this great event in your university, and ask if they have suggestions. Often, you know, they're in that circle of people, academics, who are working and studying a certain issue, so they can link you to their colleagues who would be good. And that's also a great opportunity to have a reason to go see your professors during office hours and to kind of form more of a relationship, show them that you're really interested in this issue. And I think that's just good for all of us to have, you know, professors who know who you are and can write you a recommendation perhaps in the future. And we found that students have forged really meaningful relationships with their professors just through organizing events. And in addition to academics, it's good to have a balance if possible. Sometimes people in smaller cities, people at the university are really the only people that students can find to be experts. But if you're especially in New York or D.C., these big cities, they have, you know, the government offices and tons of businesses and NGOs, and it's great to have a balance of those types of people to get different takes on the issue, because it's not a panel with everyone, you know, speaking to the choir about have the same opinion on a subject isn't the most interesting event to go to. So we encourage people to seek business and nonprofit leaders. And business leaders are especially interesting and especially difficult to get to speak, because, you know, it's kind of out of their realm of everyday activities. But I think that that's a great way to look into interesting people. And again, senators and representatives, any elected official is a really great person to have at your panel discussion, especially coming up this November if there are elections in your community, even people who aren't elected yet but are up for office. It's great to have them to come to kind of grill them on certain issues and demand that they give you an answer on what they stand on these different issues. And they're most likely looking to get out there to get their word out, especially to youth. So this is a great time, just this coming fall, to invite elected officials and people up for office. And lastly, columnists and reporters. As our panel this afternoon will show, media has an immense importance on, you know, how our culture is shaped, how Americans think about different issues. So it's really key to try to have representatives from the media, columnists, reporters. And you can often look at kind of alternative publications and smaller publications and have a greater likelihood of people agreeing to speak with you. And also probably an interesting take on the issue. And lastly, we'll suggest speakers that you can invite as well. So the best way to send an invitation, I've gone over this a bit, but use our templates. They've been successful. We've used variations on them to get the speakers here today. We make everything transparent in our organization. We use a lot. We try to be very efficient, and so we use similar things that, you know, ways of wording our organization and ways of wording what we like to get out of these events, because it's concise, straight to the point, and it's been successful in getting good speakers. Call before you send your invite, then send the invitation out, most likely via email. It's actually the best way nowadays to contact people. I would say very rarely there's need to send a paper copy, because it just takes too long and people are more receptive via email anyway. And then follow up 3 to 5 days later if you haven't heard back via phone. Next we have posters. I think there's an example. Yeah, so here's an example of one of our posters. This is one from last year, and I think they've greatly improved. There's a copy in the toolkit of the new poster that has an image that we all really like at AID that a student created at Bowling Green State University, and it has it's just a really good image for this series, I think. It's on page 12. So what happens with the posters is after you have your event registered, you send us, you know, the room number, the time, we send you this poster, and it has blanks that say speaker name, insert day and time. So we send you this Word document, and you just fill in the blanks, essentially. So you fill in the speakers, the day, the date, the time, you send it back to us, and we'll send out copies. Let's see. You email the template to us, and then we send out hundreds of posters. I mean, we can send out however many you'd like if you're very ambitious. We usually send out about 200 on bright colored paper in a box, a priority box that gets you in 2 days. And we also send out push pins and tape and sign up sheets, just really everything you would need for your event. And we have lots of recommendations for these posters, because again, we've organized so many events that we've formed kind of a to-do list for hanging up flyers. So when you receive your box of all these beautiful flyers, we have lots of tips. First is to avoid the bulletin boards where, as you probably know from your university communities, there are just 100 posters on one board, things are ripped off every day. You may glance at it once in a while, but you would probably just see one of the 50 posters there, because there are so many and everything's on top of each other. So we recommend students to go for the unusual poster spots, places where people, you know, happen to be, and then there aren't usually posters there. So a good place is the back of a bathroom door, as I think we've probably often seen posters as well. And just areas, get creative with this, and we don't want people to break the university rules, because I know lots of universities have anti-posting rules in certain areas, but we encourage creativity. Don't flyer too early. This is really key, because if an event is, say, on a Thursday night and you flyer the Friday before, it's likely that people will see it and maybe want to come to it, but they don't have that day in their head yet or what they're doing that day, and they kind of forget what day it is and what time and don't usually come. If they want to look for a flyer the Wednesday before and then they can't find one and it's too much energy, so they're not going to come. So we recommend to flyer 2 to 3 days before your event, because then students can see, they have a sense of their schedule, and they can kind of, you know, memorize the day and time, and they're much more likely to come. Another thing is to flyer the night before your event. Do a huge blitz. We really recommend that, because the day of, students often are looking for something to do, and, you know, especially if it's around dinner time or a time when most students don't have anything else to do, they're very likely to come, even if they just have a small interest in the subject, and you may, you know, get them very interested and then change their whole career path in a best case scenario. Another thing is to hand out flyers at busy entrances. So you can be really efficient if you have, another thing, we send out 8.5 by 11 sheets, but we can also send out big sheets or quarter sheets and any, you know, combination you'd like. So a lot of students will have us print out, you know, 2 sheets on one page like the toolkit is, and then they'll cut it so they're half sheets and hand them out to 200 people before a busy lunchtime period at the cafeteria. And that's really effective. And also putting up kind of tent flyers like the speaker placards here and putting them on cafeteria tables is a really good way, because lots of people go to the cafeteria, obviously. Hit key community spots. So even though we say to avoid the bulletin boards, there are other areas, you know, like a quad or things like that, where all students are walking past every day. And we recommend going there since there's such high traffic. Another great option is to make announcements in lectures. If there's a really big lecture, maybe an intro to political science or something like that, to approach the professor, especially if you're in the class, it's very likely that the professor would allow you to just get up for a few minutes. But even if you're not in the class and maybe know the professor, or just approach the professor and ask them, tell them you're putting on this event and you'd love to make an announcement to their class. And that's a great way to get to a big audience of people who are really interested in the subject if they're taking a class related to it. Another way to form relationships with professors and, you know, let them know about your devotion to these issues. Yes. Lastly is contacting the media. This is a part of publicity that is very important. We've had our events covered in lots of big media, small media outlets, the New York Times, the Boston Globe, as well as very small local publications, and often in the school newspapers, town halls will be written up. And so that's a really important way to just increase your sphere of influence of putting on an event. You put on a town hall, maybe 30 people come, and those people will all go back to their group of friends, their family, tell them maybe about the event, tell them about the speakers. So that's a huge sphere of influence already. But if you get your event in the media and maybe, you know, they quote you about what a speaker said, or they quote some of the speakers, you reach that many more people of everyone who's reading that publication. So this is, I think, a really interesting and effective way to get the message, you know, of what you feel about this issue out to the American public. So we have templates of press releases in the toolkit. And it goes through the event, what it's about, what questions it will ask. And in similar fashion to the poster, we have you insert the list of speakers, the city it's taking place in, and the rest is done and written for you. It goes through kind of what I read at the beginning, the concept of this Hope Not Hate series of events, of bringing positive action out of the ashes of 9/11 5 years later. And so we think the best way is to, after you tailor these press releases, to, as similar to the reserving of the room, to kind of pursue different avenues at once to be really effective. So it's great to ask these to be put on the community calendar before the event. In the local newspaper, most likely, all of them will have community calendars, and that way you can, you know, appeal to community members as well as university students for your event. Identify key editors is important to send this press release to, and similar to the speaker invites, it's best to call when you're sending it, and with press releases, the best way to send them is usually fax, versus email. And you can send us a fax number and we'll fax anything out, because I know that for students it's often difficult, even when sending out resumes and things like that, to find a fax machine and not be charged for it. So we're happy to fax out anything you'd like us to. Just send us the document and the number. And so we recommend that you call, fax it out, and then call again to follow up if possible. And this kind of outlines that process. So you identify key editors, call them, email them, call them, email them, call them, email them. So the idea there is just to be, when we say when you first think that you may be becoming annoying to the editor, you've just gotten started, and that's when you can really start to have an effect. Press is one area where if you are very persistent, most likely you will be rewarded, but you have to really not be bothered by being annoying and having people say, why are you calling again? You already called four times. So if you're dedicated to that, then your efforts will pay off. They have with, these are all the publications, not all of them, but a selection of the publications where our town halls have been featured. These are town halls just that students have put on at their universities. Another thing is don't forget to email. This is with the first step of reserving your room. One thing I failed to mention was mail merge, which is something that we use at AID very often. Has anyone used mail merge? Raise your hand. Oh, a lot of you have. Well, it's often a surprise to students when we tell them about it, and it was to me, because it's just this amazing thing that Microsoft Office has, where you can have a Word document and an Excel spreadsheet, and you can merge those two documents and email out, or you can make letters. We usually use it with email. So I won't go into the technical details, but basically you can send out thousands of seemingly personalized emails just with the click of a button, merging names and even, you know, a sentence of information on their specialty. And so that's a really great way that we can teach you how to do that. Or you can just send us the information and we can mail merge things out ourselves. Lastly, this could be you. These are students at Florida State University who have really taken our model and become really creative with it. They put on an event in Miami on alleviating global poverty, and the main leader there, she had a lot of friends who were reggae artists and different musical, she had invited musicians to her event and had it be kind of a cross between a concert and a town hall event. So there was a panel and there was a concert and there was another panel, and it was just extremely successful. She had several hundred people and drew in very different audiences than the typical people who would come to a conference on alleviating poverty, because they were interested in the music and they found out that, yes, they were really passionate about these issues and they found really good ways to kind of work on them in their own neighborhoods. So that's a good example of just being creative and, you know, letting us know where your ideas are and we can help you implement them. So there are a few other ways to be involved besides the town hall model. The town hall is kind of our bread and butter. That's what we do most of our events on across the nation. But these other small projects I think are really important as well. And one is hosting a video conference. I love video conferences, and I'm manage them for our organization, so I'm extremely passionate about them in general. Has anyone ever been to a video conference? The same people, I think, have mail merged, have been to a video conference, and have been to a town hall. But only, I think, three of you. And that's a great opportunity, because it's this technology that is available almost everywhere in the world, that's almost as easy as a phone call nowadays. And all schools in the U.S., I don't want to say all, but the majority of schools in the U.S. have the capacity to do video conferences. And it's just a great medium to get into. So it's a similar, we have a whole toolkit for video conferences. It's a similar format of the steps a student would take to the town hall. So I won't repeat myself, but with the reserving a room, you would just go to the library, usually the AV person. Again, that can be the most difficult part, just finding out, you know, who to go to, who knows about it. But if you find someone, a tech person in your library, perhaps, who knows if you have video conference capability and where and when you, how you can reserve it. that's you've made amazing progress if you get that far. And what I've experienced, when talking to students, they have said, you know, I never even knew we had this, and it's so amazing that we do have this, and it's free, and there are all these resources at most of the universities we go to, and I think it's important to tap into them. So basically, it's similar to the town hall model, where we have a panel of 2 to 3 people, experts. Sometimes they'll all be at one site. If we have a site in New York or D.C., that's especially likely. Otherwise, we'll just have, you know, people at different sites. And usually there are about 3 to 4 sites in the U.S. and 3 to 4 sites abroad. And so we have a panel of, you know, English-speaking experts in the States, and then we have one presenter from each site abroad to present, to be a part of the panel and to present a brief 5 to 7 minute, you know, statement similar to the panel in the U.S. And so the medium is kind of a screen like this, usually not as big. I wish it were this big, but not this big, and split into different, you know, 3 or 6 screens where you can actually see the people, your counterparts, in either another university in the U.S. or abroad. And we designate dates where we have, you know, the video conference on U.S.-Muslim world relations on, you know, a certain date, October 9th or whatever it is. That's not it, but we haven't done the dates yet. We'll be doing those in early August. So how that works, where in the town hall you would contact us when you want to organize one, and we would start the process. For the video conferences, on our site we list the dates and the deadline for registering. And you would just check with our website and let us know if you would like to be involved in one, and then set it up on that certain day. So the similar format to the town hall: opening presentations from a panel of experts, and then the discussion moves from site to site with presentations from the sites abroad. Again, the key organizing steps are locating a facility, reserving it, using our templates from the toolkit for video conference organizing, and recruiting participants using the publicity steps from the town hall. It's very similar in terms of the press releases, the posters, everything like that is the same. And again, we support you with a mini grant similar to the town halls, with the sending out of publicity. A key thing is we coordinate with the sites abroad, and we're our liaisons to your tech people at your universities. So as long as you identify, you know, the person and get his phone number, we can really take it from there and handle all the technology of it. We go through the Global Development Learning Network, which is based in D.C., and they have sites on almost every country worldwide. And so we work through them to facilitate these, and they've been really helpful. We've had Afghanistan on website, on our video conferences. We've had, I'm trying to think, I can't remember now, but we've had Paraguay, Benin, Ghana, just, they vary. Every site has new countries, and it's a really amazing way to speak to people, you know, abroad, see what they're thinking, and really get beyond the headlines of these, you know, bus plunges that you see every day of horrible things going on across the world, and realize that, as we all know, but it's really good to see that there are people behind these things who have beliefs who, you know, are very similar to us in a lot of ways. Another program we have is to hold documentary screenings, which is especially popular now during the summer, where a lot of us are, you know, in apartments or we don't have the resources of universities at our disposal, and there aren't students on many universities. So this is a great summer opportunity, and there's a sheet in your folder on kind of opportunities with aid that lists these documentaries. But what we do with these is we do the publicity step if you'd like, with posters and things like that. But during the summer, we're mostly just doing apartment viewings of these DVDs. So you would contact us, and we can send you out a package with these whichever documentary you would like, and popcorn and a sign-up sheet. So if people want to be on our listserv and want to know about future aid events, they can. And you can just show the documentary to your friends, family, or whoever you'd like to invite. And we have lots of different options. They've been updated now, and more detailed synopses are on our website. Strange Days is, I'll just speak about the ones that I've seen. Strange Days is about the environment, and it's I think, a really compelling four-part documentary on how, you know, the environment is showing us that things are changing and that we need to take action. Invisible Children, has anyone seen Invisible Children? I know they did a huge event in New York, and that's a really interesting new documentary, and there's a great movement behind it to get support for different humanitarian issues. And next we have a Young Writers Club, which is constantly developing, and I should make a quick plug for we're having a conference on July 22nd in New Haven, Connecticut on journalism. So just check with our website if you're interested in journalism, but it's going to be a great conference. We have Warren Hogue from the New York Times there. And then we'll be talking about this in a lot more detail. But we encourage everyone who's come to our conferences and anyone in general, I think there's always a need for more voices to be heard in the media. And a way to do that is to write letters to the editor based on your experiences, you know, at a conference, at school, your experiences being in wherever city you live and experiencing that culture. We are totally, we love to read people, students, what they have written, and so we can act as editors if you'd like to send us anything you've written, and we can give you feedback and just help you find places to possibly be published and things like that. AID writers have been published in local, student, and national papers, including the Christian Science Monitor and various other publications just in the last 6 months. And lastly are these community-wide initiatives, which are a little different and pretty far from the topic of this conference, so I won't speak at length on them. But one thing we've done recently this semester is a campaign for the Urban Environmental Accords, which is just a local plan to get your local mayor to take action on the sustainability of your community and environment. So that's all I'll say about that, and contact us if you are interested. And this is an example of one student who was involved in that and kind of the process he followed for getting a band of community members together to back this environmental document. He contacted all these groups and got this group together for a conference similar to this, and has been recognized by his state legislature, and he's gotten three mayors to sign on. So that has been very successful, and just contact me or anyone in our organization if you'd like more information. And lastly, we just want to be really clear that we want to be your jumping off point. Follow the example of chapters, like I mentioned earlier, at Florida International University. Make an event your own. Use your creativity to really bring these issues back to your community, to your friends, wherever you go to school. I know we have lots of people are in New York for the summer, but I know people are from pretty diverse areas across the United States, and it's really important to bring this kind of dialogue to the New York, D.C. kind of foreign policy corridor, but also beyond, to the Midwest, to the South, to the West, to everywhere in the United States where it's really needed. And that's the end of my presentation. Thank you very much.